again, my name is Andy, and I'm a PhD student at Stanford University. And actually, this past summer, I had the opportunity to work at Canon USA with my mentor, Francisco and Mai. And our topic of investigation was using tunable color pixels for multispectral imaging. So first off, let's look at some of the traditional multispectral cameras out there today. And this first case is the time multiplexing multispectral camera. So what this is basically you have a sequence of captures done one after another, then you perform calculations to estimate the spectral reflectance. Now, if you think about it, time multiplexing cameras like these may take up to 30 seconds in order to calculate the spectral reflectance. And so this will only work well for static scenes. So what would happen if you didn't use this on static scenes? Well, that's what this example is over here. So basically, this is an example of a real-world multispectral image taken by Harvard University. And what happened in this scene was that there's actually large portions of it that displayed a lot of dominant movement, such as these branches over here, branches on this side as well. So then the authors actually decided to mask out these regions, deeming them unusable due to movement. So one possible solution to this multiple capture problem is actually using a color filter array solution. And actually, there's many cameras that do this today. And what happens is basically you have a CFA that may have six or more channels, and then you perform demosaicing, and then once again calculate the spectral reflectance. Now, the problem with these type of cameras is that although these work for dynamic scenes, they now have a large loss of resolution, especially because you're using six or more channels for reconstruction. So an example of this camera would be the Canon Expo camera, and it's actually a 50 megapixel medium format camera with six channels. Just to be clear, it's not the CFA pattern over here. It's not the same CFA pattern used in this example camera. So now we have the two traditional cameras, but there's actually one other problem with them, and it's the fact that it's actually very difficult to reconstruct complicated spectral reflectance curves, especially since there's so many different materials out there in the world. It's actually very difficult to use one sensor to be able to accurately reconstruct so many spectral reflectance curves under one calibration setting. So this actually brings us to our next topic, which is tunable imaging sensors. So one of the tunable imaging sensors that stood out there in the literature is the transverse field detector, or TFD, and this is being researched by Giacomo Langfelder. And what's actually very remarkable about this type of sensor is that you can actually allow for multiple channels per photo site. So how does this work? Well, basically, the sensor takes advantage of the spectral absorption properties of silicon. The longer the wavelength light, the lower it will be absorbed, the deeper it will be absorbed by silicon sensor. And then if you think about it, you can actually apply a transverse electric field, and that's what these lines are here. And the electric field will then diagonally draw the photons that are generated in the silicon to different collection sites. So here's an animation where you have the different wavelength light coming in from the top. They get absorbed at different depths and then are drawn to different collecting sites. So actually, when you think about it, if you vary the voltages at these electrodes up here on the top, you can actually vary the spectral absorption properties of the filters. So here's just another illustration. Here you have two different voltage settings on these two different examples. And what's going on is that the electric field lines are varied slightly in these two regions, and this allows us to change the spectral sensitivity curves of the sensor on a pixel-to-pixel basis. So this actually brings us to our next question, and we are actually inspired by sensors such as the TFD. What if we had a sensor that we could tune pixel by pixel and that had multiple channels per photo site and also allowed us to change the spectral sensitivity curves of the sensor arbitrarily? what kind of multispectral camera system could we build and simulate, and how could we improve on existing multispectral camera systems out there today? So this brings us to our next slide, which shows actually a default pixel state. So this on the bottom is actually an example, an illustration of what a typical camera, multispectral camera, would use for the spectral sensitivities. So while this may work well for monochromatic areas, suppose instead you have a blue radiance curve where most of the energy is concentrated towards the left-hand region. So in this case, actually most of the information is at this transition region, so it would actually be very desirable to shift all of these filter curves towards the transition region, such as shown here, where we have a blue pixel state, which is basically just a different configuration for the pixel. Now, on the other hand, suppose that most of the energy is focused around the red region, where now you have a dominant transition region towards the right. Now, once again, you would shift the sensitivity curves towards the right, and this would be the red pixel state. So I'd like to introduce a new terminology that'll be used during the rest of the talk, which is actually called an adaptive pixel state. So all this is it's a different configuration that the sensor pixel can take on. So I've introduced three sensor pixel states, the default state, the red state, and the blue state. Now, actually, you can have an arbitrary amount of these pixel states as long as it's feasible for your system. Now, let's take a look at how this works for an entire image. So here's an example image on the left. And actually, on the right is a color map that shows which pixel state to use for what areas of the image. So as you can see, that analysis I showed you previously is actually being done at a pixel-by-pixel basis. So every single pixel, for every single pixel, the system is analyzing where the dominant transition region is and where the optimal, what the optimal state is for that particular pixel in order to optimize for multispectral imaging. So for example, for the areas around the perimeter, we see here that it's there's no bias towards the radiance, so the system decided to use a default state for the perimeter regions. Similarly, for the areas that are yellow, such as the lemons and the bananas, the system detected that these radiances were towards the yellow side of the spectrum, so decided to use the yellow state in order to optimize. So actually, this is a similar thing is going on with the green pixel states and the red pixel states as well. So the important part is that the imaging system is able to adapt to the scene and optimize the sensor sensitivity curves effectively on a pixel-by-pixel basis. So how does this fit in with the entire system? First, we have your sensor preview data. And from this data, you can then calculate the adaptive state for every single pixel. So basically, it chooses the best configuration to use for every single pixel, then tunes the pixels accordingly, then you have your final spectral image capture, then estimation of spectral reflectance. So just to reiterate, only one image capture is needed in this system. And once again, the sensor is able to adapt to different scenes and different regions of scenes to improve multispectral performance. So actually, you're probably wondering how exactly this adaptive state selection block works, and that's what I'm going to describe in the next slide. So first you have your radiance curve, and then you'll have a channel readout, which is from the preview image. From this channel readout, you will then take the gradient with respect to the channel readouts. So this is just taking a difference between neighboring channels. And the reason that the gradient is very important is because it actually identifies large transitions in the radiance curve. So here you see that there's a large transition near this region here. So the gradient was able to identify that large transition with a large gradient. Now the gradients are then fed into a machine learning classifier, and the one that we used was the support vector machine, which will then select what it thinks is the optimal pixel state to use for a particular pixel. And in this case, it would be red, since this radiance curve is biased towards the red section of the spectrum. Now let's take a look at the simulated systems we use for our study. So the first two systems are the traditional systems, which consist of the time multiplexing case and the CFA one capture case. And actually, we decided to simulate a system specified by Mao et al. That specified generic CFAs depending on how many channels you want, and they also had a demosaicing algorithm in that paper. The third system was our tunable sensor system that I just described, and it features adaptive pixel state selection. So here's a look at our experimental setup. We simulated everything using the iSET digital camera simulation software. And in order to calculate the multispectral image, we used the pseudo inverse operation. And the data that we used consisted of 16 different scenes, 8 of which were used for the training, and the 8 remaining were used for testing. Now, there's actually 2 reasons why we needed training data. The first one was to actually calculate this transformation matrix A, which was calculated via the pseudo inverse operation. And the second reason was because we needed to train the machine learning classifier. So here's a look at our data. So this is actually a collection of data from Foster and Farrell, and we combined this data and subdivided it into 3 categories: people, fruits and vegetables, and foliage. So half of each subdirectory, these subcategories were used for training, and the remaining half were used for testing. So here's a look at the metrics that we used for the study. The first one was RMS error, which basically just measures the difference between the estimated and ground truth reflectance curves. And an example where this would be useful would be for scientific or computer vision applications. The second metric that we used is SCLAB. And all SCLAB is a spatial modification of delta E. And delta E, SCLAB would actually act as a very good indication of how different 2 images visibly look to the human eye. And this would be very useful for consumer photography applications. Lastly, let's look at our results. So the first experiment we decided to conduct was actually varying the number of adaptive pixel states to allow. So first we started out with 1. So basically this means that there's only 1 configuration to choose from. So therefore this is the case where we're not tuning the sensor pixels at all. So afterwards, we decided to add 2, 4, and 7 adaptive pixel states, and these are the tunable sensor cases. So as you can see, starting with 2, we see that actually the answer to our question before was, yes, tuning the sensor and adapting to different parts of the scene actually helps the system in this case. However, we weren't able to see large improvements as we increased the number of pixel states from 2, 4 to 7. And this may be because of poor adaptive pixel state selection or construction in the first place. So this is the same experiment, but in SCLAB, you get a similar result, except that the difference is much smaller than before. So here's a look at the overall performance. In blue, you have the time multiplexing case, the red, the one capture CFA case, and in green, our simulated tunable sensor system. So as you can see, the CFA system isn't able to perform quite as well as the time multiplexing system, and that's mostly due to the fact that there's demosaicing going on and we're losing some resolution in the process. Our tunable sensor system is able to outperform both the traditional systems, even though it only requires 1 capture. Now here's a look at the SCLAB distance. In this case, the difference is much smaller. So this suggests that perhaps the way we're tuning the sensors isn't quite fit for consumer photography applications, but it could be changed to be able to fit that if we needed to. And here's the summary of our performance once again. On the x-axis, you have the number of captures, and on the y-axis, you have the RMS error. So for this type of graph, it would be extremely desirable to be as far to the lower left as possible, because on one hand, you want to reduce the number of captures you take so that you can capture dynamic scenes. At the same time, you always want to reduce the RMS error. So in blue, you see the traditional systems. So you have your time multiplexing system with 6 captures, and you reduce the number of captures to 1 capture, and that actually causes the performance to suffer because of the demosaicing algorithm. But our tunable sensor system is able to outperform both the systems, and it's able to reduce the number of captures and also able to reduce the RMS error at the same time. And just to summarize, we proposed and simulated a new spectral imaging system using tunable sensor pixels. And once again, it only requires one capture, and it improves the performance over traditional six capture and demosaicing one capture techniques. And it's able to do this by adapting the sensor pixels to different portions of the scenes and regions of the scenes. So although it works well, it leaves room for future work, such as tuning the amplitude of the filters or actually using true sensitivities from tunable sensors such as the TFD. And once again, we could actually try to automatically generate adaptive pixel states that are more optimal for the scenes. Thanks a lot for listening to this talk. And I'd like to give a special thanks to my mentor, Francisco, for being such a great mentor over the summer, and the rest of the Canon San Jose R&D branch for offering such a warm welcome. And last but not least, I'd like to thank my group members at Stanford, Joyce Farrell, Professor Wandel, other group members, and also our colleague, Professor Tominaga, for giving good feedback for this presentation. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for your talk. I enjoyed it. So one thing that's still not quite clear to me is that there's an advantage to shifting the filters around. Mm-hmm. You showed that with one tunable state that there was slightly more error than mm-hmm. with more tunable states. But you had one tunable state, so I assume they were shifted in one direction or the other direction in that tunable state. Did you ever compare it versus just spread out evenly across the spectrum, and how did that compare to
Oh yeah, so the one tunable state in this graph was just the spread out system, as you mentioned. So that was just the default tunable state that normal multispectral cameras would use.
Okay, thank you.
I guess I'm a little confused on how a preview shot doesn't count as a shot.
Okay.
So that was one question. Uh-huh. And did you also look at some of the two-shot methods that mm-hmm. have been developed?
Yeah, so we haven't looked at the two-shots methods, and that's actually a very good suggestion. Thanks so much for that. That's definitely something we would like to look into in the future. And for the one-shot question, to answer your first question, actually there's a continuous preview stream of the scene. So this is actually similar to what you get in regular maybe point and shoot cameras where you have a preview image, and those wouldn't count as an actual shot and actually would just serve to help the camera evaluate exposure and so on and so forth.
Very interesting talks. Thank you very much. Can you comment on the stability of the states? So if you switch from one state to the other and back, mm-hmm. is it exactly the same, or are there slightly changes?
Are you wondering how much it affects the performance of the system by changing the states?
Yes.
So it depends if it's actually, so I showed before that there's actually a pixel state selection algorithm. It depends how well the algorithm performs. If it actually picks the correct state, and it also has to do with how ambitious you want to be with selecting those adaptive pixel states, if you want to shift them very close to each other or if you want to leave them spread out. So if they're actually shifted very close to each other, you could potentially have high instability where under one state it'll give very good performance, another state it won't give very good performance. But if you shift them further from each other, aren't as ambitious, it's a little bit more stable.
I also think you have the liability if you mm-hmm. Go to state A, make it 250, mm-hmm. go to state B, make it 2 more. Then if you go back to state A, do you get back to state A or something else?
I'm not sure if I'm understanding the question.
Well, I mean, every time you change those voltages, your well shapes change.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
Yeah, so the question is there any relaxation?
Ah, okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So that would be a better question for Langfelder, who's actually investigating these type of sensors. And that actually brings a good point, and maybe we collaborate with him a little bit more and figure out what the limitations of the system are in the future. We could make a more realistic simulation of the system.